Welcome to the Invest with Clarity podcast, where you will learn how success in investing, as in life, is the result of absolute clarity. Mark Pearson of Nepsis in Minneapolis, Minnesota, shares his passion for portfolio management and commitment to transparency and communication to allow investors to fully understand what they own and why, bringing them to clarity in their investments. And now, here are your co-hosts, Matt Halloran and Mark Pearson.
Hello and welcome to another Invest with Clarity podcast with Mark Pearson. Now, today we're going to stop the insanity. In fact, hold on. Stop the insanity. Sorry. You know, Mark, I think I've always wanted to use that and I've never been allowed to use that on a show. So I appreciate you letting me do that today. So let's talk about this. What is the insanity? Because I don't know about you, brother, but there seems to be a lot of it right now.
Well, again, as we have talked about the power of investing with clarity, right? The idea of knowing what you own and why you own it. And there's no greater example of this than what is happening right now with this coronavirus. Mm-hmm. And the media loves to shine attention on things that get people engaged to make an emotional decision right away. And maybe that's why Bernie Sanders is talking about in his economic plan, right, that he wants to put a tax, a quote, modest tax on Wall Street speculation, end quote.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that interesting?
I think it is interesting.
My question would be, what is speculation?
Well, I was just going to ask you, can you define what speculation means? Because I'm not sure I even know what he means by that.
Yeah, is Bernie Sanders going to make that decision? No. The reason why I bring that up and say that is, to be quite frank, a lot of investors do speculate because they don't know what they own and why they own it. Mm-hmm. And if you don't know what you own and why you own it, then you are speculating. You are not making a necessarily an intelligent investment decision. And this is the part of the reason we've talked about in previous podcasts about indexing mm-hmm. and owning ETFs and quote unquote and owning the stock market, if you will. Because the industry likes to, you know, for lack of a better phrase, make this as little complicated as possible for investors and somewhat keep them on the emotional predisposition of making quick, irrational decisions, not unlike what they did in the end of 2018 and 2019. We've talked about this topic over and over again on the podcast about the emotional biases and the lack of clarity that investors have. And there's no question that right now, this new virus and the new outbreak here has got everybody on pins and needles. Now, as we're having this podcast, because I know, you know, there's got to be production before this thing will be uplisted up, mm-hmm. right? But right now, according to, we're having a little bit of a bounce back today. This is February 26th, I believe.
It is.
The S&P 500, ironically, with all of this noise going on, right? The NASDAQ is literally year to date right now, as we say this, is up about year to date on February 6th, 0.76%. Again, it's up 0.76%. The Dow is down 4.62%, the Russell 2000 down 5.81%, and the S&P 500 is down 2.56. The ACWI is down 3.84.
Okay.
Year to date, it's February.
Right.
So all this panic, all this noise after a tremendous 2019, this is what we're subjected to, this insanity, right? Now, yes, it's true that the S&P at one time was up over 4%. So we've roughly seen about a 7 to 8% pullback from top to bottom on the S&P.
Okay.
After all of this noise, okay? So the point here is listen to the podcast about biases.
Yeah.
Listen to podcasts here at Invest with Clarity about knowing what you own and why you own it and investment process. Investment decisions should be made over time, not over long periods of time, not short periods of time, right?
Mm-hmm.
So when you think about a pullback like this, you shouldn't be thinking about panicking. You should be lining up what companies do I want to buy more of? Of course, which is exactly what we have been doing.
Right.
I'll give you some interesting statistics, and ironically, market reactions during virus emergencies. My crack research team, headed by Chuck Getzweiler, put this together. You remember SARS?
Oh, yeah.
January of 2003 to March of 2003, 38 trading days, the S&P was down 12.8%.
Oh.
The avian flu, January of 2004 to August of 2004, 141 trading days, it was down 6.9%. MERS, in September of 2012, November of 2012, 43 trading days, the markets were down 7.3%. Ebola, December of 2013 to February of 2014, 23 trading days, down 5.8%. Zika virus. Remember the Zika virus in November of 2015 to February of 2016?
Yeah, I must be.
66 trading days, and the S&P was down 12.9%. Now, coronavirus, January 20 to present, this number, when it was put together, it was down 2%. We've actually seen, let's call it 8% pullback. We're right in the sweet spot of pullback on viruses,
right?
And now they're starting to talk about people going back to work and yada, yada, yada. Now, I'm not in the business of predicting where the bottom is, but between myself and my team, my thought was, if we went down 8%, this is a few days ago, if we went down 8%, that's roughly half of a 15% pullback. 15% is about all you're going to get. I mean, SARS was 12.8, right? Mm-hmm. So they're already talking about having a, what do you call those, medicine for it? What
they call a it? Vaccine.
Vaccine, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
But the constant hammering on investors and the fear that they are portraying of this is completely insane and out of whack.
Well, I'm going to pause you there. It just, first off, it's weird that I knew every one of those diseases that you were talking about.
That's because we're old.
I know. But the other thing is, so when somebody is invested in an index or an ETF, when the market does do this, they are going to get caught up in the panic because they're going to see their indexes react in a very similar way than a pullback. But if you truly know what you own and why you own it, then you're going to do what you do best, which is to take advantage of being able to buy great companies at a discount. Is that fair?
That is absolutely correct.
Hmm.
You are dead on that. So I'll give you, I got a text from a friend of mine. We don't manage money for him because it's a business relationship. It's a conflict, and it's best we don't do that, right? So he texts me and says, quote, the market is cratering. This is yesterday, right? What's a poor momentum investor like me to do? He's a momentum guy, right? Huh. He doesn't have a strategy. He's an emotional investor. He is a momentum guy. I said, well, first, you should be appropriately asset allocated.
Uh-huh.
If you're in all momentum stocks, you have no flexibility to take advantage of pullbacks because momentum stocks are just going to continue. All of them are going to go down, right? There's been really no safe haven per se, except for a few areas. But everything doesn't go down the same amount, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I said, in a sense, you have to ride the correction out since you are all momentum. We are now down around 8% from highs. Could see another 7%, just like I said yesterday, right?
Yeah.
15% down,
mm-hmm.
pending a global pandemic. They're saying now it's not really going to be a pandemic. So we are halfway through potential correction. His response was asset allocation,
Oh, no.
What's that? I'm not familiar with that term. And he was joking,
of course.
So the point is that as an investor, if you are appropriately asset allocated, anytime you get a pullback of 7, 8, 10, 15%, you should be looking at selling, if you're in ETFs and mutual funds, doing what they call the static rebalance, right? Rebalancing all of your funds to your target percentages. That forces you to sell profit and buy stuff on sale.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really the only option, in my opinion, you really have if you're going to be a quote-unquote asset allocator. In the case at Nepsis, what we have been doing is we took some profits in some things that we believe coming out of this will not perform as well coming out of it. And other names that we own, which we think are tremendous long-term investments, we got to buy more of on sale.
Hmm.
And this is going to turn out to be just like any other standard ho-hum pullback. And like we always tell our clients, Matt, always be prepared for a 20% pullback. So a couple things I want to remind our listeners to that and remind you of about pullbacks, and that they should not be feared, but they should be revered. Okay. Over the last 40 years, the S&P 500 has been up 30 times or 75%. Over the last 40 years, there's never been a year without one, without a pullback. Over the last 40 years, the average intra-year drop was 13.8%. Investors must expect a 15% drop in each and every year. These are expectations. The key to success, Matt, is understanding your expectations and having low expectations. I've used the story about Warren Buffett. You know, when Ted Koppel asked him, what's the key to success? He said, low expectations. I love that answer. That's exactly right.
Let me ask you a quick question about something you just said, though. So if every single solitary year I can expect, because historically we've seen that, you know, anywhere from a 15%-ish pullback, what happens if you're taking income?
I think that's a great question.
Yay!
You see, if you're taking income, your portfolio should be appropriately asset allocated. This is one of the things I love about the Nepsis investment process, which is about owning individual businesses as opposed to funds, because you can sniper rifle where you're getting your cash from. In general, we always have cash, right, in our portfolios. For the most part, there's some level of cash. And the asset allocation is there's always a level, particularly if you're taking income out, those are more income-based or balanced-type portfolios, right? So I'll get tell you exactly one of the things we did. We brought our utility positions back into the target level that they should be at, because those stocks during pandemics or during virus outbreaks like this, generally those kind of stocks hold up much better. So I'll give you an example. Duke Energy is up 9.22% year-to-date. Southern's up 5.1%. And these stocks really didn't have much of a pullback during this correction. Exelon is up 4.72%. But these stocks, you know, were up big last year. So when you look at a rebalance or when you're looking at income, you always want to be in a position where you are able to take cash when you need it to provide the income so you can ride that volatility out.
That makes a lot of sense. Yeah, that does make a lot of sense.
So again, one of the things we haven't talked about in a long time, and I think it's very pertinent as it pertains to black swan events, and we always tell our investors, and I think in a recent podcast even, we discussed this. Always be prepared for black swan events. Always. Always be prepared for a 20% correction. On average, 20% corrections happen every 5 years. Now, we got spoiled in the last decade because we didn't have one until 2018, really. Mm-hmm. At the end of 2018, we got down just about 20% on the S&P. That's the only time we've had one in the last 10 years.
Yeah, but that wasn't a black swan, though. Can you define black swan again for everybody?
Right. A black swan event is an event that is an unexpected event that happens that, you know, can impact markets.
Good.
It's,
okay.
It's something like a tsunami or a virus that we have had happen here with the coronavirus, right? Mm-hmm. And those kind of things can happen at any given time, right? Because in theory, a black swan event is unpredictable. And it is beyond what is normally expected of any sort of situation and could potentially have severe consequences. So they don't happen very often, but the term black swan event is used for that reason. That's why you have to be appropriately asset allocated. That's why you have to take a longer term standpoint on your investing. That's why you can't quote unquote time investments or time the market. You have, and people want to say, well, you can do technicals, you can use technicals. Look, when black swan events happen, no offense, but a lot of times technicals are thrown out the window.
That's right.
And it only takes one time to be wrong. Mm-hmm. To completely impact in a negative way your long-term investment goals.
All right, hey, I want to jump in here with this, because if you truly know what you own and why you own it, right? If a black swan event happens, you can know what that company generally does during a black swan event, but you can't do that with a mutual fund or an ETF. Is that fair?
That's without question. Without question. I'll give you a great example. I've used this example before. I remember I was literally on the cross trainer one morning. This is back. I don't even remember when, what year. Maybe it's 2011, 12, 13. The Japanese tsunami. I forget the year. 2011, maybe, I think is when it was. Anyway, it's going on, right? Right as the markets are opening. And I'm watching these reinsurance companies that we own in our portfolios. And the example I've used in the past was Renaissance Re. And I'm watching this stock down like 12%. And it went from like 72 down to like 63 or 64 or whatever it was. And I'm thinking, okay, that company has zero to do with Japan or impact from a tsunami. And that wasn't the only one. But that's just one example, right? To clarify or to emphasize what you just said. And so that stock went down like from 74 to 63, whatever it was. I'm like, holy cow. And we loaded it up. We backed up the bus and another bus and three more buses. And we bought a lot of that stock in the low 60s. Incidentally, today, what is this, 8-9 years later, the stock trades for a paltry $200 a share. So 65 to 200, I don't know, you do the math. What's that, about 170% return?
That's pretty darn good, man, yeah.
Over 8-9 years?
Mm-hmm.
Plus it paid a dividend? Heck yeah.
Yeah.
So when you know what you own and why you own it, you have greater clarity in the decision-making process. We've talked about in previous podcasts the idea of what we have created here at Nepsis, the conviction index. So there's a ranking that of conviction level that I will have when it pertains to a certain investment, a company that we own. And when it goes down a certain amount for no real reason, where, i.e. the long-term fundamentals haven't changed, that provides tremendous opportunity to take advantage of things, right? So I'm gonna throw you a couple really interesting returns right now, okay? Because this can totally change, but as of right now, okay? So JD.com is a China name, right? So everybody's worried about China and their earnings and stuff. JD.com is up 12.89% year to date right now on February 26th. Baidu is down 3.83. Bizon is down 3. IQ is up 15.4. These are China companies, okay? Now, Bank of America, only U.S. company, not even have international exposure, down 12.29%.
Huh.
Citigroup down 12.79%. I'm just looking down the list of American companies. Walmart down 3.66%. What's the moral of the story? Amgen down 10%. That while everyone is fretting over China, and China stocks are actually performing year to date in many cases better than the U.S. counterparts. Isn't that ironic?
It is ironic.
Well, what did we say in our last podcast or two ago? We believe that we're in the beginning stages of a long-term secular bull market in emerging markets,
yeah,
including China. And some argue that China really isn't even an emerging market. But this virus will come and go. This virus will go. And there'll be another one in the future, right?
Yeah.
But there are so many people in China. Their economy is on the growth, on a path for huge growth over time. You cannot overlook the opportunity to invest in very good, profitable businesses long-term when corrections happen. Period. Oh, by the way, incidentally, Baidu got down to like $93, $94 in 2018. JD.com got down to like 19. IQ got down to like 15. Remember the numbers I just gave you where they're at now?
Yeah.
So even if you took a 14-month period from December of 18 till now, those stocks have rebounded significantly. Is time in a stock, not time in a stock. Stick to your buy discipline, stick to your sell discipline, and turn off the TV. And quit listening to babble.
Yeah. Well, that is a great way to stop the insanity, to truly rise above the noise, to know what is actually going on. And the only way that you can know what actually is going on within your portfolio is if you know what you own and why you own it, and know that there's a discipline behind it. Closing thoughts. Anything else that you want to say about this insanity, my friend, before you close it up for today?
Biggie, I think you summed it up perfectly.
Well, with that, all of you need to share these podcasts, especially the last three that Mark and I have done, because it truly outlines why it's so important to work with a company like Nepsis. Here's the deal. There is, with the elections coming up, with all of the things that are going on, there's going to be an enormous amount of insanity that is going to impact the market for really no apparent reason. And unless you truly know what you own and why you own it and how that could potentially affect your income producing portfolio or just your other portfolio, you have to know what it is, what's in there, and have a conversation with somebody who can talk to you about all of that. So please make sure that you click that share button. Super, super easy to do that. And if you have not subscribed to the podcast, click that subscribe now button, because that way, every time we come out with a new one, it'll show up directly on your listening device. So for Mark Pearson and everybody at Nepsis, we want you to invest with clarity. We'll see you on the other side of the mic very soon.
The content discussed is for informational purposes only. It is not a solicitation or recommendation for any securities that may be mentioned herein. Advisory services offered through Nepsis, Inc., an SEC-registered investment advisor.